Let's start off with the word of prayer. Dear Jesus, thank you so much, God, for tonight. Thank you for each and every one of these students being here, God. We know that they are not here by accident. We know that for whatever reason that they decided to come tonight, God, that you have them here for a purpose, that you have a word for them, that you have work that you want to do in their lives. And Lord, maybe some people walked in here tonight and they're like, I don't have anything to work on. I don't want God messing with what I'm doing. But God, we just pray that you would cut through all of that in all of our hearts, God, that we would be open and willing to change and to become more like your son. Be with us as we look into your word, we look into some of these spiritual truths. And Lord, tonight I pray that as we walk out of here, we'd have a little bit of a better idea about how to deal with the struggle that always ends up coming into our lives. We love you. We're grateful for what you've done for us and how you love us in your name. Amen. All right, so we are in week two of our series that we're calling The Struggle is Real, okay? And we think it's important to talk about this stuff because struggle is something that everyone can identify with. Every single person deals with struggle at some point in their life. Rein it in. Thank you. Every single person deals with struggle in their life in some way, shape, or form. Everyone understands that. No one is disagreeing with that. Struggle is a part of life. Okay? To quote The Princess Bride, pain is, what is it? Life is pain, Highness, right? And because that's true, pain, struggle, difficulty, it comes up in our lives all the time. And so we believe that as you guys are dealing with the struggle in your life, that you need to know what it is, what it isn't, and most importantly, what God has to say about it. So that we are not held captive by it and we are not destroyed by it, but instead we will walk through it in a way that honors God, okay? So last week we laid some groundwork and we gave some framework to what the word struggle is as we are talking about it in this particular context. And when you talk about struggle in the spiritual world, in the church world, when it relates to Jesus, it's usually one of two things. It's either that your struggle with sin, the temptation to sin, our fight against sin. And we can understand that because the scripture describes sin as chains. It describes sin as something that keeps us bound and keeps us prisoner. And we're fighting against that. We're struggling against that. And you hear that term come up a lot with people who are fighting sin and dealing with sin. And we are all in that boat, right? We need to make sure that we come back to that often. We are all in that boat. Every person in here has sinned. Every person in here was born with the temptation and the bent towards sin. There is nothing we can do to fix that. The power of the Holy Spirit is the only thing that can fix that. The sacrifice that Jesus made for us on that cross is the only way for us to have victory in our life, for us to be free from sin. And sin, when it's all grown up, leads to death. Okay, so that's the one side of the struggle that comes up a lot when we are talking about struggle when it comes to spiritual things. And then the other side of it is just hard stuff in life. You know, we have different struggles in our lives. And oftentimes it's things that we don't even have any control over. There are things that have been put on us or things that come into our life that we didn't ask for. Maybe we did nothing to bring on to ourselves, but they're there. And they're difficult and they cause us hurt and they cause us pain. And we can understand that because every person in here has experienced both of those things. And last week we spent some time talking about what the struggle was not. Okay. And it was important to do that because if we are functioning under wrong thinking about what our struggle is, where it comes from, even how to work through it, if we have ideas in our head of what it is when that's not really what it is, we're going to function out of those ideas and we're not going to be able to have victory in it. We're not going to be able to point to Jesus through that process. So we needed to take some time and look at what it is not. And we looked at a number of different things. So today what we want to do is build on that. I mentioned this last week, and I'll mention it again this week. Man, this is the sort of series you want to be here every week for, especially next week. You know, week one and week two, we have important things, and I believe God can speak to us. But, man, next week is where the hope comes in. Next week is when the power comes in, and you do not want to miss it, all right? But last week, we kind of looked at what the struggle is not, so that we stop believing that those are the things that it is. And this week, what I think we need to do is even bring some more clarification to that and look at what the struggle is. And we're going to look at a few different things. And again, like I said last week, this is not exhaustive. This is not every single little nuance of what struggle is. But these are things to get us talking. These are big things that we need to confront as we look at what the struggle is. And I apologize for my voice. I know it sounds gross. Bree's like, yeah, it does. Gross. I'm a little sicky sick, but I'm good. I just might have to take a drink from time to time. But I think it is important, just like last week we took time to look what it's not, this week we're going to look at what it is. So three things we're going to work through today of what the struggle is, okay? So first one is this. The struggle is a constant, okay? The struggle is inevitable. No one here gets a free pass on life to never experience struggle. No one. Not a single one. Doesn't matter where you were born. Doesn't matter who you were born to. Doesn't matter if you make all the right decisions in life or all the worst decisions in life. Struggle is a constant. It is inevitable. It is something that we will come up against over and over and over again. Depressing, right? But that's the truth. Struggle is a part of life. And we need to understand that. But so many of us tend to be surprised when struggle enters into our life. It makes me think of this. I had this kid in our youth group in Nova Scotia named Jordan. And Jordan was hilarious. I think I've even told a few stories about Jordan before. But Jordan had cerebral palsy. And it affected his body and movement some, but it affected his mind a lot more. And he had a couple other things going on as well. But one of the things that Jordan would do is he'd get really fixated on something. And he just couldn't let it go. He just would really be fixated on something. Like, he would always ask Megan what she made for me to eat. He'd be like, Megan, what'd you make your pastor? What'd you make your pastor today for lunch? You know, he just, every time he saw her, he would say that. And he had really specific rules about how long I should talk at our youth group. I may have told the story here before, but he'd be sitting in the audience. And when he thought I would be done, which no one do this, please. But when he thought that I should be done, he would just sigh really loud. He'd just be like, ah, and I'd try to keep talking, ah, like one of those, and I'm like, oh, Jordan, just a second, I'm coming. Or he'd just start clapping to try to like wrap it up, you know? And he would get really fixated on things. So if you start to clap, I'm going to assume you want me to stop, not that you think it's really great, okay? Yeah, thank you guys. You guys all suck. I hate you all. I hate you all. But he would get real fixated on stuff, and we would go to the beach a lot. Because we lived right on the coast, and we'd go to the beach and do bonfires and beach days and stuff like that. And we'd hang out at the bonfire. Some people would try to swim, even though it's Canada and freezing. But Jordan would come every single time, and he would get extremely fixated on the tides. He would be really concerned about the tides coming in and out. Probably most of us here have been to the beach at some point. Tides come in, tides go out, right? Like that's their deal. And he would be really, really fixated on that. And he'd stand at the waterline in his swim trunks with his boogie board, like ready to go. And I think of all the times that we went out to the beach, I never saw him go in one time. He was like waiting for the perfect opportunity to go in, like when the tides were just right and they just never got there for him, you know? And so I would be like bouncing around, talking to people, doing the youth pastor deal. And at times I would end up talking to Jordan. And one of the things he would always be like, Pastor Kyle, the tides are coming in. The tides are coming in, or Pastor Kyle, the tides are going out. And he would act really surprised like that was happening, like he didn't expect for the tides to come in and out. And I'm like, yeah, Jordan, they're coming in and out. They do that a couple times a day, every single day. And the tides are constant, right? As long as the moon is hanging in the sky, the tides will continue to come in and to come out. We shouldn't be surprised when something that is constant is happening, right? And I know in his mind, he kind of had a different approach to that, but I mean, it would be silly for us to look at something that was inevitable, to look at something that is constant, that is proven over and over again, and then be surprised when it happens, right? But we do that so often when it comes to our sin struggles, and we do that so often when it comes to just the hardships that we deal with in life. We act surprised. It's like, what? Where did this come from? What? I'm tempted to do something that I've already failed at 100 times. How is that happening? Or, you know, I did things right, or I was born into a good family, or I was born into the church, or I was born in America, so my life should be easier than this. How in the world is there all this struggle in my life? And when we do that, When we act so surprised, we will fail every time when those struggles come. If we act surprised, if we're not prepared in our hearts and in our minds for the sin struggle, the temptation that comes, for the hard things in life that comes, there's no hope for us to act godly in those situations, right? We have to prepare for things if we want to get through them well. That's the truth in everything in life, right? In sports, in school, in activities, in work, you have to be prepared if you want to have victory, to succeed. But so many of us just kind of go through our life and we act so surprised when difficulty comes. But we need to make sure to look at this clearly, because I think if we do, we can change two things, and two things that will help us have a greater opportunity for success and for acting Christ-like through a struggle, okay? So two things, it changes it. When we know that struggle is inevitable, when we know that struggle is going to come, that it's a constant, it changes our perspective about it, and it helps us be prepared about it. So it changes our perspective from this attitude that, no, but my life should be easy. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where something difficult happens, not even a big deal, flat tire or something, and you kind of have this attitude like, God, why would that happen to me? Yeah, cut me a break. Give me a break here. I have said that so many times to God, like, man, I just love to catch a break here over something that was not really that big of a deal, but it was an opportunity for me to show God's kindness, compassion, character, or not. But because I wasn't prepared for it, prepared how I was going to respond to it, I didn't respond very well. But if we can know that struggle is going to come, we can kind of stop being entitled. We can kind of stop being so arrogant to think that struggle shouldn't ever touch us and we shouldn't ever have to deal with any of this stuff. And it helps us, like I said, the second thing, be prepared. It helps us think through, hey, how am I going to respond when hard things happen? How am I going to respond when temptation comes? What can I do to even keep from that stuff coming up in the first place? I got another beach story for you. When we are unprepared for what's to come, for the hardship that's to come, it will take us out at the knees every single time, without fail. If we are not prepared for hardship, it will take us down. Me and my wife and Mike and Becca and Wes and Jess, I think that was everyone, we were in Santa Cruz hanging out last fall, and we were down at the beach. We were hanging out. My kids were there with us. We just had Abby and Judah at the time. And we were down at the beach, and we wanted to kind of go around these rocks to like another beach. And the waves are coming, and the waves would like crash into the rocks. But like, we were like, oh, we're cool. We can like sneak past this before the waves hit, you know? So Mike runs and he's fine. And then we wait, and Becca runs and she's fine. And we wait, and Wes runs and he's fine. And we wait, and we're like, okay, we're ready to go. And me and Megan run, and I have Judah on my shoulders. Megan has Abby in her arms. And we start to run, and a sneaker wave comes up and just hits us in the back. I have just a second to turn around and notice, like, ah, crap, this is happening. Hits me behind the legs, and I was, like, straight back. With Judah on my shoulders, straight back into the water. And I jump out of the water like a mermaid, and I look around, and Judah's still on me. I somehow grabbed his hand. I look down, and I just see Abby floating, like, face down with all her hair, like, so I'm like, like, just rip her right out of the water. And I'm looking around, kind of on adrenaline, and Megan had, like, hit her head on the rock, so I kind of try to scoop her, and we get around to the other side, and we're like, what the heck? That was ridiculous. All Becca's fault. She gave us the go-ahead. It's her fault. But the reason that we were unable to keep our footing on that, yeah, the wave was strong. Yeah, it might have knocked us down a little bit. But the reason that it was such a harrowing ordeal was because we weren't ready for it. We weren't prepared for what was to come. And because of that, it knocked us straight down. Now, here's the deal. A lot of us in this room have gone to camps, have gone on missions trips, have gone to conferences, have had these moments where God spoke to you in a way that you're just like, I cannot explain it any other way than God was there. And he talked to me. And I don't even know what that means for my life, but something needs to change. And I've seen this, and your small group leaders have seen this. And you come back from an opportunity like that and an experience like that, And what's the first thing that happens when you get back? That sin that you just can't seem to kick rears its head and is just ready to go. You're all of a sudden back in the same friend group that you used to be in, and none of them are on the same page with you. And they're kind of like, what is your deal? You're being so weird. Or you come back to a family that's really dysfunctional. Or, you know, it just happens that something really difficult goes down in your life. And because you're not prepared for that, it knocks you down. We have to understand that struggle will come. And oftentimes it comes on the heels of a really amazing experience with God. But I think we would see so many more people, ourselves included, kind of walk through the changes that God wants to do in our life if when we come back from those amazing moments in God's presence, we are ready. We are prepared. We are looking for ways to make sure that we are prepared for when temptation hits and for when struggle hits. And the first thing we need to do about that is not be surprised when it happens and know that it's a constant. 1 Peter 4, verses 12 to 13 say, "Dear friends," this is Peter talking to a group of Christians, "don't be surprised at the painful trial you are suffering as though something strange were happening to you." We act like this is so weird that this would happen to me. He says, don't be surprised by that as though something strange were happening to you, but rejoice that you participate in the sufferings of Christ so that you may be overjoyed when his glory is revealed. Let's not be surprised by struggle. Let's not act and just bump from situation to situation and act like, oh, it'll be fine. It'll never come up again. Let's be ready for it. Let's be prepared for it. The second thing that the struggle is the struggle is a tool. And that's not like an insult toward the struggle. Not like struggle's a tool. You know, like the struggle is an instrument, okay? The struggle is not your master. The struggle is not the one pulling the strings. The struggle is just a tool. It's an instrument. When we endure struggle, we need to understand that there is a lot more going on behind the scenes than we believe sometimes. We looked at that verse last week where it said, your struggle is not against flesh and blood, but it's against the spiritual realm. It's against the principalities. There's this whole war going on behind the scenes that we can't see. And we need to understand that because that war is going on, because all that is going on behind the scenes, the struggle itself is not even the end all be all. It's just a tool. And we got to decide whose hand we're going to put the tool into. There's this awesome story in the Old Testament of the life of Joseph. And if you've been around and you go to like Sunday schools and stuff like that, you've probably heard the story before. Joseph and the coat of many colors and all that deal. And so a shortened version for those of you who may not know, the story of Joseph goes like this. Joseph was part of a big family, had a bunch of older brothers. He was the youngest in his family. And he was kind of a tool. He was kind of a jerk. He would come. This is the kid who would come down at breakfast and be eating and be like, oh, by the way, I had a dream that all you guys were like bowing and worshiping me. Weird, right? I don't know. Probably should do that. You know, like this is the guy who thought a lot of himself. He was his dad's favorite, and his dad would give him all sorts of privileges and all sorts of gifts. He gave him that coat that was a whole bunch of different colors, which was a big deal at the time. And it kind of all came to a head, and his brothers were like, we're just sick of him being such a punk. You know what? We're going to kill him. We're going to it's kind of drastic, I know. But they're like, we're going to kill him. We're going to take him out. We're going to pretend like he's going to help us do some work out on the land. And we're going to kill him and leave him there. So they take him out there, they're angry, and it finally boils over, and they take this coat from him, and they push him in a hole, and they're ready to just leave him there to die. And God's working behind the scenes even now. The brothers come across these slavers, these guys who deal in the slave trade. And they come, and they're from Egypt, and they say, hey, you might as well make some money off of this. You're already in this deep. Man, make some money off of it. So the brothers decide, okay, we'll sell our brother into slavery. At least we didn't kill him, you know? We get to make a little scratch on the side. So they sell their brother into slavery. They take the coat back. They concoct this huge story about how a wild animal killed him. And it's done in their minds, right? You follow Joseph's story, and he gets taken to Egypt, and he gets sold to a guy named Potiphar. And Potiphar is like an official. He's kind of a big deal in the Egyptian world at the time. And things are looking up for Joseph. He's earning influence, he's earning extra responsibility and stuff like that. Things are looking pretty good for him. And then all of a sudden he's confronted with this opportunity that could either skyrocket his career or tank it. Potiphar's wife, like the original cougar of the Old Testament, comes on to him and she's like, hey, you should come have sex with me. And he's like, no thanks. And so he has this opportunity to either go for it and, you know, keep it under wraps and still enjoy the things that he gets to enjoy in the position that he's in and all that sort of stuff, or run away from it. And he chooses to run away from it. And it's this whole big deal. Potiphar's wife yells rape. And he's like, he tried to force me into this. And Potiphar believes his wife. And he's like, I can't believe you'd betray me. And Joseph ends up in jail. Okay? So it's just this roller coaster thing with him, right? He's like, oh, I'm doing good at the beginning. Oh, and then I crash. My brothers hate me. They try to kill me. And then, oh, I'm doing pretty good. And then it crashes again. And while he's in jail, he again starts to earn influence, starts to earn responsibility and respect. He interprets the dream of a man who ends up getting out of prison and ends up sitting in the king's, in the Pharaoh's court. And eventually the Pharaoh has this really weird dream and he's like, I need to figure this out. And God's working behind the scenes. And this man says, hey, a guy in jail, which every good story starts with that. I know this guy in jail who can interpret dreams. So the Pharaoh brings him up and Joseph's able to tell him, yeah, your dream means that there's going to be this awful famine. And there's going to be no food. You need to start preparing for it now. You need to start saving up now. And the Pharaoh's so impressed with Joseph that he's like, that's a great idea. I want you to do it. And Joseph ends up the second most powerful man in Egypt. And the story kind of ends with a really awesome resolution that Joseph's own family, his older brothers who left him for dead and sold him into slavery, end up coming to him, not recognizing him, and saying, you know, the famine has hit us too, and we need help. And, you know, there's some back and forth, and he almost makes a bad decision, but he pulls it around at the last second, and he ends up revealing himself to his brothers. And this is what he says to his brothers at the time. So he's had this roller coaster thing, a lot of hardship. Here's what he says to his brothers in Genesis 50, verse 20. As for you, so his brothers are heartbroken. Remember that, like, I can't believe we did this. I can't believe you're still alive. He says, as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring it about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. Joseph said, even though what you had planned for me was destruction, was death, was evil, God had something good in store. We talk about this all the time at our church, that there's a good design and there's an evil design. And the choice that we have in that, like, God has a good design for your life. The enemy has an evil design in your life. Our choice in it is, what design are we going to live under? And when we find ourselves in the middle of temptation or in the middle of struggle, the thing that we are responsible for is not to get rid of the struggle, not to get out of the struggle. It's to decide, whose hand am I going to put this into? Who am I going to let lead my life? Am I going to believe the lies that the enemy tells me, that I am worthless and that I could never be loved by God who's perfect, that this is just too difficult, I should just do what's easy at the moment? Or are we going to put the struggle that we're going through in the hands of God, who says, you're my child, I love you, I care for you, even if you hate me, I'm willing to die for you? See, we don't think about it like that, right? We just, all we can see is that, man, I'm in a hard situation. Or all we can see is like, man, I'm just feeling like ridiculous amounts of temptation. And we think that that just is the end all be all of what's going on. We have to understand the struggle is not as big a deal as we make it. It's a tool. But whose hand are we going to put it into? That's something that Joseph did over and over and over again. Every time he ran into a hard situation, every time it was he was a young guy. I'm sure he was tempted to just give in to that whole Potiphar's wife thing. I'm sure that was a temptation for him. When he was in jail, I'm sure it would have been easy for him to like buy favors and do things like that. When his brothers came to him and they wanted food, how easy would it have been to be like, screw you guys, you left me for dead. But each and every time, he saw the struggle, he saw the temptation, and he decided whose hand he was going to put the tool into, and he chose God every single time. And guys, you can do that too. I can do that too. When we have struggle, when we have temptation come up in our lives, we can choose to believe in God's design and live under God's design, or we can choose to believe and live under the enemy. So whose design are you living under tonight? Whose hand are you putting the current struggle you find yourself in? Whose hand are you putting that tool into tonight? The last thing that we want to hit on is the struggle is an opportunity. Sometimes it's easy for us to just want to get through a hard time, right? Can anyone relate with me on that? Sometimes it's just easy to just want to just get through to the other side. Hello from the other... Sorry, I just thought of that. I'm not a good singer. This is the example that I think of. I hate running with a burning passion. Anyone who likes running is ridiculous. But I'm going to Thailand in a few weeks, and we're going to be doing some like backpacking and stuff there. And so I decided, I probably should be able to handle that. I don't want to be the guy that's being left behind, And so I went running one time, so I'm good, right? Yeah, good. All right, so I went running one time with Megan. Megan runs fairly regularly, and she's really great at it and stuff. But I went running with her one time, and this is the only thought that went through my head the entire duration of our run. I hate this. I hate this. I wish it was over. I can't wait till I'm done. I want to go sit down. I hated it. I do not understand why people like running. Sorry, everyone in here runs. I don't get it. I don't get it. So the whole time, rather than thinking about, hey, this is part of the process of me being able to do what I need to do, rather than thinking about that, all I could think about was, I hate this. I hate the situation I'm in right now. I just wish that it would end. And maybe some of you can relate to that. And maybe even some of you, that's how we treat the struggles that we run into in our life. When we experience temptation or a struggle with sin, we're kind of like, man, can we just get past that so it doesn't come up anymore and so it isn't an issue for me anymore? Or a hard situation or a broken relationship or a difficulty that we run into, we're kind of like, I would just really love to be on the other side of this, please. Rather than understanding the truth that every struggle that we endure, there's an opportunity. There's an opportunity to be refined by God, to be more like Jesus, or there's an opportunity to be destroyed by the enemy. Every single one. There is no neutral in any struggle that we run into. Everyone is an opportunity to be refined or to be destroyed. And God uses that metaphor of being refined a lot in the Bible. And what it comes from is when you refine gold or silver, it's a process where you take like the raw elements, you put it in a crucible, like a little container, and you get it super hot. You put it in the fire and get it super hot. And as it melts, it separates all like the impurities and different metals and all the stuff that shouldn't be in pure gold, right? And it separates that. And they'll take it out and they'll let it cool and they'll put it in again and it will get more impurities out, more extra, whatever the extra stuff in there is out. And the more they do that, the more pure the gold or silver gets and the more worth it has. So like a 16 karat gold, whatever, has been refined to a certain extent. A 24 karat gold or silver has been refined that much more. And God talks about refining because that's something people would understand at the time that the Bible was written. But he says this about us being refined, using that same metaphor. In Isaiah 48, verse 10, "See, I have refined you. Though not as silver, I have tested you in the furnace of affliction." Now, he was talking to people who had rebelled against him, but let's be real. We've all been in that boat. Maybe some of us are in it right here, right now. But he's saying that the hard things that you go through, there's an opportunity to be, have more worth, to be more like Jesus as a result of what you go through. So when struggle comes in any form, whether it's temptation, whether it's situations, whatever it is, there's an opportunity for us to be refined or the opportunity for us to be torn down. Rather than saying, man, I can't believe this is happening, rather than saying, I would just really like to get to the other side of this, my life sucks so much right now, rather than saying that, living in that, what if every time a struggle came up in our life, we asked the question, okay, God, how can I become more like you in the middle of this? I understand that that's difficult. I understand that that's not easy. But what if that was our attitude, What if tonight when you go home and your parents are asleep and the computer's totally free to do whatever you want on it, or your smartphone's in your hand, in your room? What if in that moment, when temptation rises its head to look at things you shouldn't look at on your phone or on your computer, what if in that moment, rather than saying, like, I can't believe that this is happening to me again, what if we said, hey, here's an opportunity for us to practice discipline. Here's an opportunity for us to choose righteousness even in this situation. What if the next time that we find ourselves in a group of friends that are totally trashing on someone who is totally on the outs and has no one looking out for them, what if instead of just keeping our mouths quiet and just kind of not rocking the boat, what if instead we looked at it and said, hey, here's an opportunity for me to be a voice for the voiceless? What if the next time that you find yourself in a basement with your boyfriend or girlfriend watching a movie and, you know, things are getting heavy, if you will, what if the next time you find yourself in a situation like that, you don't say, man, it's so hard to be pure in this life, even though the lights are low and we're under the same blanket, it's so hard. What if the next time that situation came up, we didn't make excuses, but instead we said, hey, here's an opportunity for me to invest more in my purity and show my respect for my boyfriend or girlfriend? What if the next time that your parents are going at it and they're angry at each other and things are really starting to get out of control? What if instead of just feeling sorry for yourself, you were able to say, Lord, I'm going to choose peace in this. I'm going to choose to have peace in this situation that is so awful. What if the next time that you lose someone? What if the next time that you have a grandma, a grandpa, a friend, a parent, whoever, pass away? What if we were able to actually say, as a result of this really hard thing, I'm going to choose to trust Jesus more and more? This is not saying that it's going to be easy, and it's not like just like shrugging away all the hard things that we go through. But every single time that something like that comes up, we have the opportunity to trust him. We have the opportunity to become more like him. We have the opportunity to be refined. And if this could all boil down into one thing, it would be the desire to trust God, to know that he's working behind the scenes, to know that he has our best interest at heart. And the band's going to come back up. We're going to end our time tonight with some more singing. And we're going to sing a song tonight called Trust, and it's an awesome song, and it's so appropriate. We planned it for this series because the most important thing that we can do when we understand what the struggle is, not what the struggle is, what God has to say about it, the most important thing that we can do is say in our heart of hearts, God, whatever comes, even if I understand it or not, what I'm going to do is I'm going to choose to trust you. We have to know what the struggle is not. We have to know what the struggle is as well. We have to know that it will always be there. So be ready for it. We have to know that it is not our master. It's just a tool. And whose hand are we going to put it in? And we have to know that every single time it comes up, there's an opportunity for us. We need to be choosing to be refined rather than be destroyed. Ask yourself those hard questions. Seek God's heart as we close our time out here tonight. Because no matter what we go through, he is with us. He's working behind the scenes, and he wants to make us more like him as a result. Let me pray, and then we'll sing together. Lord Jesus, I thank you so much for tonight. I thank you so much for who you are. God, I pray that as we, through the struggle in our lives, and as we think through the hard things that we're dealing with, God, that we would see them for what they are, that we'd see them clearly. And Lord, we're going to get into it more next week, but that we would even understand that they really don't have any power. You're the one that has the power, God. You're the one that loves us so much. You're the one that offers us life when we were dead. And God, I pray that as we confront the different struggles that we're dealing with in our lives, we would not let them control us, Lord, but we would choose to honor you as a result and through the process. And God, just be with us as we continue to seek your heart here tonight. We love you. We thank you in your awesome name. Amen.